Hey, you're listening to World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger. Today, Emily King. Like a heartbeat racing, like a new beginning. Emily's new album is called Scenery, and it feels like she's having a breakout moment now, even though her 2007 debut album was nominated for a Grammy. Emily recently needed a reboot on inspiration, a chance to start fresh. She's lived in New York City her whole life, but learned to drive a car for the first time and drove herself upstate to a rented house where she and producer J Most hold up to make her new album in the garage during winter.
A lot of the times we were freezing cold, so we had to get one of those space heaters and just turn it on for like 3 hours. I have a picture of me with this hat on top of my headphones. Okay, but it worked out.
I would say it worked out. This album is incredible. It is so tasteful, so nuanced, so unique. And Emily is here to share stories from the making of the album, along with some of her experiences in the music business, including what it was like to be signed at a young age, sing for Clive Davis, and how she was nominated for a Grammy for her 2007 debut. We will get to all of that. But first, here's Emily with her exceptional band and a couple of very slick backup singers with coordinated moves. They are performing the song Can't Hold Me. This is Emily King on stage at World Cafe.
In a t-shirt, in my satin lingerie.
Steve.
live on stage at World Cafe, Emily King with Can't Hold Me. Emily, I have been waiting to welcome you to this show for so long. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here and meet you finally.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a pleasure. There's a moment that people didn't see on the radio, but maybe they could hear in the applause where you're sort of strutting across the stage with your backup singers in that song.
It's fun.
You are living. Like, it just, the whole album feels like joy and triumph and hope, not in a braggadocious way, but like humbly triumphant.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So what's going on? Like, why does your music make me so happy? Aww. Is that the way that you are as a person, or is there something really special about this moment that we're hearing?
I think I always want people to have a good time. Like, I, you know, I just don't, you know, I want everyone to be happy at all times. Mm-hmm. And so, which isn't always good for life, because you need things to be shaken up sometimes to make progress. But on this album, I just want to have a good time. And I wanted to make records that would lend themselves to the stage in that way, where we could have fun and dance and do all that stuff. Mm. So I think it is kind of a moment, something that it's new for me to be able to do that stuff on stage. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it looks like a really good time.
Thanks.
Yeah, so let's talk about, I guess, creating that universe of sound where you could play and have fun and dance on stage and all of that. It's hard to talk about music in that way, I think, but maybe you can give me a little bit of a sense of figuring out, like, the musical universe that Scenery lives in.
Yeah, sure. I think I wanted to try new things on this record. I didn't want to repeat myself. And that's kind of why I uprooted and tried a new scene and change, you know, my ideas about who I was. And like, I just was in a hamster wheel type of situation.
Because you were living in New York
Yes, I was living in the apartment I grew up in.
Wow.
With mom. And trying to save money, you know, because it's so expensive. And I was like, do I get a studio in the city, you know, in a dungeon somewhere with like 12 roommates? Or do I go to the country, because my heart is kind of calling me to be out in nature and have that experience? And so I learned how to drive, and I, you know, had to kind of overcome all these little fears, and that I had told myself, you're not that person, you can't do that. And I think that kind of exposed a creative side of me as well, that then the album kind of took shape while I was upstate, while in my new environment.
Whoa, wait, so you learned how to drive. You're born and raised in New York, so I guess that's probably not something that you do growing up.
No.
That sounds like a really pivotal moment where you're like, I need to get out of this place and I need to learn how to drive in order to... So tell me about learning how to drive as a fully formed grown-up. Like, how did you get your car? What's this?
A lot of jokes. Okay. Everybody's got a lot of jokes. And, you know, once you get past that, then you realize, okay, wait, everybody's out here doing this. It can't be that hard. Mm. And then I got my license. I don't know how she passed me, but I passed, and then I had to go buy a car. So my mom and my grandma came up, stayed with me, and kind of made sure I didn't get ripped off by...
Did I read that your grandmother used to sell cars?
It was one of her many hustles.
That's
yes.
So... You do not hear of women... Like, I don't picture somebody's grandmother having been, in that era, a car salesperson.
Especially back in the day.
Right? She had a really big personality.
She's like... She is. And she was very sexy. You know, she showed me I'm like, you sold cars in that? She was like, I sold a lot of cars in that. So, that's okay.
So the moment that you decide to get this car and to drive upstate and to make a change, and you said that you were living at your mom's house, I think that we hear the spirit of that on the opening track on the song, Remind Me.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I hope so. Yeah.
So say a little bit, I guess, about the connection between feeling the doubts that you just said before that you felt a little bit of, and then, like, getting in a car and going somewhere.
Oh, thank you for saying that, acknowledging that song. That song was the first one I wrote when I got upstate. I had been writing songs before that, and I was really overthinking the process, and I was trying to write the perfect song, and I'm listening to all these songs that I love and thinking, what's the formula? There's got to be a, you know, what's the recipe here? And I spoke to one of my best friends, Shervin Lainez, who is an amazing photographer who did my last two records, and I was like, how do I write a great song, you know, I'm struggling with this. And he said something along the lines of, I don't want to hear a great song, I want to know how you feel. Mm. I was like, ugh, that's so much harder than, now I have to feel things?
Ugh.
Yikes.
Cool.
And I was sitting in the house by myself for a few days. Then finally I thought I should try to write a song right now. And I just sang these words into my phone. And then when I finally got that hook, I sang it out loud, you know, outdoors. And I was like, brought tears to my eyes. And that's when I thought, oh, I'm feeling things. This is awesome. And so that was, came from a real feeling, that one.
Jeez. Well, let's go over to the stage at World Cafe and hear your performance of it, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Been without it for so long. Forgotten what it feels like. Been in the darkness till you came along, showed me the daylight. Yes, and now I'm trying so hard, but I can't shake it, shake it. Ooh, no, oh no, I can't shake the memory. Myself, something that I used to feel like a heartbeat racing, like a new beginning. You remind me of something else, something that I used to feel, something like what I've been missing. Oh, like what I've been missing. Oh, something like what I've been missing. Oh, so long I didn't know the difference.
as Remind Me in all of its glory. Oh my goodness, Emily King performing on stage at World Cafe with what one audience member described as a low-key murderous band.
Hey,
he was like,
hey,
low-key murderous.
I don't know awesome.
If that resonates, but yeah, they're incredible. So that's the first song that you wrote when you got upstate for this world that you're creating that we now know as an album called Scenery. There's another song that I want to talk about, and it's Marigolds.
Like a dream, marigolds.
That's my favorite part.
That's my favorite part of your whole record.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry. Well,
yeah.
I love all of it, but that...
Yeah.
And it's just tucked in there so...
J-Mos, he'll do things like, you know, he'll be like, I'm not really going to do this. I'm like, please keep that on the record, you know? What makes him so great, part of what I really enjoy about working with him is he serves the song. Mm. And so he's not trying to be up all in the videos, you know, all that stuff. Like, he's like, it doesn't need this, so let's not put it in there. But he has so many tricks up his sleeve that sometimes I have to plead with him, like, please just leave that because it's fun. Mm. And yeah, Jeremy did all that stuff in the garage up at the house that we rented. And a lot of the times we were freezing cold, so we had to get one of those space heaters mm-hmm. and just turn it on for like 3 hours. And then go in with like fingerless gloves and real booted up and suited up, and we're just like, okay. So he would be in there, and so maybe that's part of what made it more of a quick situation, because you couldn't be in there too long.
Did you make the whole album under this circumstance?
Like, I mean, a lot of
I'm
it,
having a hard
actually,
time.
Now that I think of it.
I'm having a hard time accepting that this album that to me is so warm and inviting, you're
right.
Like, you're suffering through, your like body is shivering.
Oh my God, probably trying to keep ourselves warm. I have a picture of me with this hat on top of my headphones. Okay, we made it through, but I don't know. It was not what we expected.
Wow.
But it worked out.
Emily King is with me here on World Cafe, and her album is called Scenery. I want to talk a little bit about the New York digs that you grew up in as a kid, because we don't hear cool. from a lot of people who are born and raised in New York City.
Oh.
And you had said that you were living with your mom in the house that you grew up in.
Yeah.
So can you tell me a little bit about the place where you grew up?
Yeah, I grew up down below Haston Street. They call it Nolita now, north of Little Italy. So it was like Lower East Side, where Lower East Side meets Little Italy, and Chinatown's right around there too. So, you know, it's been through a lot of changes. It's just a small one-bedroom apartment. There was like 7 of us in there at one time. Like my grandmother, we had birds. I don't know who thought that was a good idea to have birds. We had a dog, all this kind of stuff. But I think it was a special experience because my folks were always playing music too. So we got to be around all this great music, and they're singers, and they sang together when we were kids. And so, yeah, the city mixed with having that. I mean, people come to the apartment now and they're like, this is it, you know? I can't believe that you all grew up in here. There's not a lot of sunlight. I'm making it sound real bad. It's my home.
It sounds amazing. It actually sounds amazing.
It's such a special place. It really is. And my mom always made it fun and like, you know, the thing is like, there's always so many different kinds of people coming in and out of the city. So you don't really, the city comes to you, you know, the world comes to you. Mm-hmm. And so I felt well-traveled even as a kid, you know.
So we found a little video of your mom and dad in their jazz duo singing. And I want to play a little bit of it and talk a bit about what that's like. Let's have a little listen if that's okay. This is like 1991 Tokyo.
Wow.
Waiter,
to them, right, is Kim and Marion.
Oh, so sweet.
And in this video, like, your mom's wearing this beautiful, like, white sort of like shimmy dress, and your dad's in a tux, and it's like they're so beautiful and so elegant.
Oh, thank you so much. That's what a throwback.
But are those the sounds of your childhood?
Those are the sounds of my childhood.
Were you with them in Tokyo then?
No, I think we were with a babysitter. That was a big trip for them, you know. Yeah. And I remember that they went and played all the Blue Notes, and I think if you go to the Blue Note in Osaka, they still have this table with their autographs in it underneath the glass. And I mean, yeah, that's special stuff. They split up at a certain point and they stopped singing together. So definitely, it's sweet that you brought that up. I mean, they're doing their thing now and we're all happy, but certainly it was tough at that time.
How old were you when that happened?
Like 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 10 or 11.
That had to be a really hard experience to, like, go from everyone being in this one place and doing this thing together, and then I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah. I mean, it worked out for the best. I cannot imagine them together at this point.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it was tough, but they've always been, you know, very understanding of each other, and, you know, I always feel bad for, like, people that try to get the money out of the husband or the wife, that's, and though they use the kid to get back at each other and all this stuff. And they never did anything like that. So we always felt loved, and it worked out. And they're very different artists now. My mother is, like, she writes choral pieces, and she sings this in this beautiful classical way, but it's influenced by jazz. And my dad is a straight-ahead jazz singer, and he teaches every Sunday at Smalls in New York City, shout out. But they're so different in a beautiful way that I understand, looking back, like, of course that wasn't supposed to continue.
But a perfect time, like a really special time.
It was fun.
I read that they made a pact that once they had kids that they wouldn't stop making music together and being artists. And I think that's such a beautiful thing.
That was, I appreciate that for sure.
Did you know that when you were a kid, or was your sense, like, did you always know that you were going to be an artist and that this is sort of just the way that life goes? You figure it out?
I think that just the situation was like this, you know, there wasn't really any other like options. So I was just like, okay, I just felt like that was just it. And I didn't feel like anything else was calling my name, you know. They would have supported me if it was, but I just thought, okay, I think I can probably do this because I've seen them do it. So it felt natural. But I did, when I dropped out of high school, I had to, like, have a meeting with them.
Oh.
It's like, I'm leaving school now. I can't be here anymore. I'm driving me crazy. And they were very understanding, and they just said, okay, but can you get your GED at least something? So I went to summer school, and it came in the mail, and I was like, damn, I should have done this like 18 years ago. Why all the suffering? So that was a big relief. I was so happy to be out of school.
So out of school.
So happy.
How old? 16?
16.
16? Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about, I guess, what happened next and the sort of career leap that you made next. But first, I want to hear another song from the stage.
Awesome.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Please. Thank you.
Great. We're going to hear Georgia, which is a song from your 2011 EP, 7?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Anything you want to tell us about this one before we hear this glorious song
that
is just so beautiful?
I'm just so glad that people like it. It's one of those songs that I wrote it and I just didn't have any opinion of it at all. And I was surprised that people like it so much. I do enjoy singing it. Mm. Yeah, so here it is, Georgia.
Yeah. I was not ready the day you gave me your heart. I was still falling apart. But since that moment, I can't stop hearing your name. Wondering about you always. Come back, Georgia, come back. Come back, Georgia, come back. I just need another chance to make it better. Come back, Georgia, come back.
Georgia, come back. I just need another chance. Chance to make it better. I was unhappy the day you left on my door. Just feeling unsure. So long I've missed you. Now I can honestly say I'm ready to love you always. Come back, Georgia, come back. Georgia, come back. I just need another chance. Chance to make it better. Come back, Georgia, come back. Come back, Georgia, come back. I just need another chance. Chance to make it better. Resting in my arms, how I wish I knew Georgia where you are. I can't be without you, Georgia.
Come back, Georgia, come back.
Come back, Georgia, come back. I just need another chance. Come back, Georgia, come back. I just need another chance. Chance to make it better.
Live on stage at World Cafe with Georgia, Emily King. So you got a record deal when you're like 19?
Yeah,
19.
I think I was about 19.
So, what did that mean to you at that time? Like, how did you get it? How did somebody find you, and what was that like, and what did it mean to you?
Well, in a nutshell, my mother had, she had a friend named Bill Brown who was at ASCAP and then Sony Music Publishing, and she was like, "Get your songs demoed." So I demoed some songs, and she played it for Bill, and then Bill passed it around to some producers, and eventually I met with Chucky Thompson, who had produced Mary J. Blige and Biggie and all these, Faith Evans, and all of the stuff that I really touches my heart because I was a kid of the 90s and I love all that stuff. And so I met with him and I loved him. So we started working together and he shot me around at different labels. So we went everywhere. And then maybe like 3 years time, or maybe less, it felt like that much, I signed with J Records. I went in and sang for Clive Davis. And
was that scary?
I was a brat, you know. I didn't wasn't scared of nobody. At the not like now.
That's
so
funny because you sort of, yeah.
I don't know. You just get more and more terrified every day. But back then, I seemed to like have it all put together. And so I thought, boom, he's lucky to have me. I had some kind of attitude, and I was excited. I had this dream, and it was coming to fruition. Mm-hmm. And so
you know, many meetings later, playing demos. Okay, come back next week with a new song. Then we got signed. And I went to D.C. and I worked on this record with Chucky. And they put it out. It got nominated for a Grammy.
Right.
And then I got fired from...
Can you pick a song for us from your Grammy-nominated record to play for context?
Yeah. Awesome. My favorite song off that record is probably It Was You. Mm. And so let's play It Was You.
Yeah.
This sadness I could no longer hide. 'Cause it was you brought the sunlight back in my life. It was you who promised me forever.
Oh my God, that's beautiful.
I have not heard that in years.
What do you think when you hear it?
The background vocals are too loud. Whose idea was that? Oh man, that's so funny. I hear my voice and it just sounds so young to me.
Yeah.
But thank you for playing that. I do like that song still.
So what was it like to make something that you love and that's nominated for a Grammy and there's all this build and you're like you're supporting people on tour like Erykah Badu and I don't know, I have them written down.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Alicia Keys and Chaka Khan.
I opened for Ludacris and random people. I opened for
Maroon 5. Yeah.
Maroon 5, yes.
So that's what is happening. But then how do you deal with what comes next? I feel comfortable mm-hmm. asking about this because yeah. it's a very happy ending. Like where you are right now is exactly where you're supposed to be. But can we talk about that? Like, what was that like?
There was a moment where I was feeling real down about it because, not because I got dropped, but because I had put out this record and I wasn't 100% behind it. And I knew there was moments where... You know, it was like you have to choose between your instinct and what someone is telling you is good. And I would go with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like kicking myself about that. And it was such a bad feeling at the end of the day to have this album that I am very proud of. But it was nominated for a Grammy. And like I said, there was parts of the album that I knew in creating it that I wasn't behind it. But I was young and I just wanted to please everybody. So when they finally let me go, I did feel a sense of relief to just be out of that situation and to kind of start over. And I remember walking by this club on Houston and Allen Street and seeing like a little piano in there. And I was like, I'm going to get myself a gig there. And it was Rockwood.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just this one little room. And Ken Rockwood, the owner, was working sound at the time. And I said, let me just do some shows. And so I would do like two shows a month just to kind of figure out what I was doing and have an audience. And also at the time it was free admission. So people felt more welcome to come in. And Jeremy and I, we were there all the time just practicing our new songs, things like that. So I really had to go start it from the bottom again.
We're going to hear one more song from the stage, and it's the song that closes your album, Go Back, which I think touches on some of the things that we've just been talking about. You sing about having some rough breaks and then going for it, I guess. That's what I hear in the song. It's such a hopeful, beautiful, triumphant song. Is there anything you want to say about writing this one before we hear it?
I was a big fan of Tom Petty in the past 3 or 4 years after I saw his documentary, and then I got to see him, Jeremy and I saw him at Red Rocks just before he passed, and I always wanted to write a song that kind of sounded like his grooves and his, you know, all the space, and I just thought, what would Tom say? Okay, you know, had some tough breaks in this town, heaven knows. This is the kind of stuff people talk about, and it was totally directed to my life. Except that mom will tell you I'm always back there. So it was a little bit of a lie, but I guess it could be triumphant or it could be sad. You could be missing the place you left, or you could be glad that you left. So however it hits you.
Hmm. How does it hit you?
Both.
Yeah?
Yeah, both ways. I definitely have some experiences that I don't wish to return to, but also... you know, I always miss home when I leave, and New York City will always be home. So,
well, we're going to go out on that performance on the stage, and I just want to say how thrilled I am for you that you do what you do, and how thankful I am for the music that you make.
Thank you so much.
Just
I'm thrilled
get
to
it.
Be here with you. Thank you for being you. Thank you.
That's easy. This is Emily King, and her album's called Scenery. Here we go. This one's called Go Back.
Maybe I'll win. Maybe I'll never play. Maybe I'll lose. Maybe I'll leave the game. Something calling, don't know where I'm going. I feel it in my veins. Had some tough breaks in this town, heaven.
performing on stage at World Cafe. That was Emily King along with her amazing band. That song is called Go Back, and it closes Emily's new album, Scenery. If you have not listened to the whole thing start to finish yet, please do. It is so worth your ears. Thanks to Emily for being here, and congratulations. And thanks also to Jeremy Most, a.k.a. J. Most, Emily's musical partner in crime, who was also on stage with her today. Congrats, both of you. Okay, and also thanks to our wonderful World Cafe producer, John Myers, for all of his work on this session and for his fast fingers in the studio playing the tunes while we were talking about them. We make this show at WXPN from the University of Pennsylvania in Philly. I'm Talia Schlanger, and I will catch you next time on the World Cafe.